You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, February 19th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeter, the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, the historian and journalist Rick Perlstein. On Rahm Emanuel's Chicago and privatization. Folks, this is a pre-recorded interview that I did last week because, as you know, I am still in California working on the Marin program. Members, keep an eye out. I'll be doing short dispatches that I'll be posting, hopefully to the feed, just to check in so you'll have some extra content in addition to some of the extra content we're providing this week. We'll be back live on Monday. Enjoy this conversation with Rick Perlstein in the meantime. We are back, Sam Steeter, on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure, as always, to welcome back to this program author of the best-selling The Invisible Bridge, the best-selling Nixon Land, and I can't remember the first one, the Before the Storm.
Before the Storm.
Yes, Rick Perlstein, welcome back to the program, Rick.
Hey, Sam, good to hear from you.
Rick, you had a piece in These Times, I guess a couple of weeks ago now, about two things that really drive me nuts, privatization and Rahm Emanuel. And midway through last year, it turns out that it was reported that Karen Lewis, who is the was the head of the Chicago Teachers Union, had become ill, and what was looking to be a challenge of Rahm Emanuel was not to be, at least from her. And so Rahm Emanuel looks like he's going to win quite handily his reelection for mayor, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's a very, very sad thing. The situation with Karen Lewis is really one of the saddest things to happen to a progressive movement, really, since, you know, the Minnesota senator's plane went down. It's quite extraordinary. I'm not sure Karen Lewis, who's the head of the teachers union, would have necessarily been a great mayor, but she would have been a great candidate. And she really would have put really in the center of this campaign a narrative about who Rahm Emanuel is, what he represents, which is kind of the worst tendencies of the Democratic Party, or even kind of the bipartisan kind of austerity elite. And Rahm's running against two very honorable opponents, both of whom are progressive and I would support as mayor. One's named Chuy Garcia, he's a county board member. The other is an alderman named Bob Fioretti. but they're just completely muffing the job of explaining that this guy is almost literally, I'm almost not exaggerating, using his office to write checks to his rich supporters. It's just more and more is coming out every day, and it's just an astonishment what this guy is getting away with.
It really is stunning, and you lay it out quite off. Well, I mean, part of this story is a story that has been sort of ongoing, it seems to me, in Chicago. Part of it's a story of how he has re-energized, if not hyper-energized, that tendency. And it's also a story of you know, just privatization in general. It addresses it. I mean, Chicago is home to one of the most famous examples of how privatization ends up costing a city, and we'll talk about the parking meters. But let's start with what bookends your piece, and this is Deborah Quazzo, if I'm pronouncing your name.
Unbelievable! That's how you pronounce her name.
And you know what's even amazing is that when we talk about Deborah Quazzo, she's replacing Penny Pritzker, who also, you know, is also sort of a perfect example of the neoliberal tendencies, not just of Rahm Emanuel, but also the president, I think, that he worked for, frankly. Tell us about Quazzo. Yeah. Maybe we'll have time to talk a little bit about Pritzker, too, because part of, we know the investments that Rahm Emanuel is involved in, evolve Pritzker.
Yeah, just Google my name and Penny Pritzker, and you can hear what I have to say about her. But Deborah Quazzo makes Penny Pritzker look like Eleanor Roosevelt. Basically, Deborah Quazzo, Chicago has an appointed school board. The mayor, unique among all the hundreds of school systems in the state of Illinois, the mayor appoints the school board. And basically, they're corporate cronies and charter advocates. And Deborah Quazzo replaced Penny Pritzker when Penny Pritzker became Commerce Secretary. And what this woman is she runs an investment company whose portfolio is solely consists of companies that make money by privatizing education. I mean, companies that make money by replacing teachers with software, companies that make money by doing things like automating report cards, doing things like coming up with educational software suites, all that sort of stuff. Charter schools, she's on, you know, the board of charter schools. So again, she is in a position to write herself checks as a member of the school board investing in getting these companies. And when I first researched this article a year ago, it was going to be done in Chicago Magazine, but it was a little too hot for them, I couldn't believe it. And I put in some calls to ask if there was going to be any, you know, kind of conflict of interest, if she was going to recuse herself from any decisions. And they didn't even get back to me. And turns out there's not. And I was just like, I would always ask people when I would meet union people in other cities and in Chicago, did people know about Deborah Quazzo? And no one did. And it took until this winter for the media here in Chicago to catch up with her. And the Sun-Times did an astonishing series in which they discovered that the companies that she invests in have increased their billings with the school board by about 300%. And there are all these suspicious contracts that were written for like $24,999. And the reason is, according to the regulations, if a contract is $25,000 or more, basically there has to be accountability procedures. And then she claimed that she knew nothing about it. So it's almost like, you know, making someone a regulator of the SEC who just got away with, you know, scamming the stock market when the boiler room or something like that. And that's just, you know, representation of government under Rahm Emanuel. I could multiply examples, but that's probably one of the most dramatic. No, it's not even. I got 20 dramatic examples like that.
What's amazing about this, too,
how stunning is that, Sam? Am I wrong? Is it crazy?
No, this is so crazy. I mean, she's handing out She, I mean, talk about sort of like really increasing the value of your portfolio, I guess.
Right.
I mean, she's handing out contracts, and it's not just even the dollar value of these contracts. These companies then go on to say, we provide these services for one of the largest city school systems in the country. So every other, you know, a school system in the country that is,
right,
you know, smaller than Chicago, which is, you know, we're talking about the vast majority, of course. Then, you know, it's like, well, this is a proven commodity.
All their objections.
And that's a really smart point.
My
favorite part is, when she told the paper she wouldn't respond to you, I guess she responded to the paper. She said she saw no conflict of interest, and you write that you recount what she says. It's my belief I need to invest in companies and philanthropic organizations who improve outcomes for children. I mean, that is just the – it is the sucking off the teat here. It is just it is and I want to go through your story here because it really just shows that on some level and you know, I've seen this in smaller towns, but when you realize you can do this to a city too, and why wouldn't you, right? I mean, it's just instead of a nickel and dimer, it's a 50 to 100,000-er or a 500 to a millionaire.
And you want to hear an example that has come out since my story was released?
Please.
You know, David Sirota, your colleague in Progressive Talk Radio, he's been doing amazing reporting for the International Business Times.
Indeed.
And he discovered that to the tune of $38 million, big donors – by the way, the Tribune discovered, and this isn't all out there, but the opponents are not effectively harnessing it. 106 top donors, 6 of them got deals with the city. 60 of them got deals with the city. But there's also an entire way that Rahm Emanuel has discovered to funnel money to his donors that they're not even counting. And Sirota discovered this. It's kind of a certain kind of voucher process, where they can get, if they're making contracts with the city, it's literally just money from the city that require no bidding and no accountability for whether work was performed. And Rahm Emanuel has dispersed $38 million this way. The inspector general has pointed out this mode of doling out city money is completely prone to corruption. So this is completely new. Another $38 million out there that he's giving to these donors. And then the Tribune did this incredible story in which they just gave example after example of Rahm Emanuel standing in a press conference podium with some developer, say, for example, giving approval to a skyscraper that was 500 feet more than the regulations allowed, and then having a fundraiser with them a couple months later in which he raised in tens of thousands of dollars from them. I mean, the pay-to-play is that blatant. And let me tell you something about why this is important in the context of political politics in Chicago. We have a mayoral election in 2 weeks on February 24th. And Rahm Emanuel has, you know, basically 10 times more than all the other candidates combined. And what he spent that on is commercials and mailers accusing other candidates of reproducing the Chicago way. You know, this old style of pay-to-play Chicago politics. And he's picked out these kind of penny anti-examples. You know, one was like this $1,500 contribution that one of the candidates supposedly got, which wasn't tied to anything, but they claimed was tied to something. And what that shows is he's using the best consultants in the business. And what they've discovered from their research is Chicago cares about this. They care about corruption. They care about pay-to-play politics. And if the progressive candidates could just effectively tell a story about this incredible devolution and how Rahm Emanuel represents this swelling, this attenuation, this kind of new mode of machine politics, I think he would be gone. Instead, we have him gliding to a re-election, and 4 years from now, 10 years from now, when federal prosecutors catch up with this stuff, maybe he'll end up in the slammer, and we'll just be completely humiliated.
It is stunning the amount and that basically that slush fund that Sirota has reported on. I think it's hard for people to sort of grasp is that there are so many of these people, and you know, Penny Pritzker, she's a billionaire, but I mean I think for the average
$12 million subsidy for building a hotel in a luxury in a kind of rich neighborhood that supposedly was reserved for a blighted neighborhood, by the way.
Exactly. And wasn't there and I want you to talk about the I don't know if this is still going on, but the funding of a basketball arena that was.
Oh, it is still going. $50 million for DePaul University. Again, out of this fund that comes from property taxes that they basically take out of the property tax pool that can't be used for schools or parks or anything else other than specific projects that basically the mayor decides himself with no transparency or accountability.
And people should understand.
Lakefront property. That's in addition to George Lucas getting to rent precious lakefront property for his museum for $1 a year.
And I mean, aside from the fact that DePaul doesn't have a particularly stellar basketball program, these property taxes, these millions of dollars, this is doled out on the heels of shutting down 50 schools.
That's right. And when our public radio station here, WBEZ, did a study of, again, we have great media here, but no one's kind of putting this stuff together, of the 8 reasons the school board has given for shutting down those 50 schools. They just kept on, you know, once one was debunked, they'd go to another one. All 8 of them were found to be lies. You know, the schools were overcrowded, the schools were undercrowded, the schools were lower performing, even though the schools they were moving the kids to were often lower performing. Just one after the other, after the other, after the other, just making things up.
You know, that's the thing. It's like, I think people have a hard time absorbing the fact that there are people who enter into government who see it as basically just an extension of their business, of their personal, like,
right.
They just
and it's
see
very
it.
Hard because he's been putting out a message for low information voters in Chicago that really makes him sound like he's Franklin Roosevelt. You know, he's done a couple of progressive things. He's raised the minimum wage and attacked, you know, his opponents for not raising the minimum wage as if they had the power to do so. And he's come up with a program to make community colleges free, but all these things have been the last couple of months, right? To completely ignore all the stuff he's done in the last 4 years, like, you know, closed mental health clinics and, you know, kind of throwing schizophrenics out in the street, you know, stuff like that.
Well, let's
and writing text to supporters.
All right, let's talk a little bit about privatization in Chicago more mm-hmm. broadly for a moment.
Right. We're OTs.
Yeah, because this seems to be something that has been ongoing. You know, I mentioned briefly the parking meters, which is, you know, an example that I cite quite regularly because it's an amazing. That to me is the perfect example. But let's talk a little bit about what Daley did back, you know, in terms of the.
Well, it starts in the 90s in terms of housing. Right?
Yes.
You know, so, you know, there's this kind of a lot of this stuff. You know, one of the clever things about school reform and housing privatization is that you can kind of make it sound progressive. And a lot of people probably got into it because. In good faith, because they thought it was a progressive idea, because in terms of housing, you know, those high-rise housing projects were awful. You know, you've seen The Wire, right? That's what we're talking about. So basically in the 90s, Daley announced the plan to tear down these high-rises and replace them with basically condos and kind of smaller residency low-rises that are subsidized by various government programs. And it was called the Plan for Transformation, and it relied on a federal program called Hope 6. And, you know, one of the people who praised this as a great idea was Barack Obama, when he was a state senator. And the idea is, well, if basically these vendors have to compete in the marketplace, then they'll have an incentive to do a great job. But, of course, a lot of what happens in government is a natural monopoly. You know, you can't, you know, sort of build another tollway if your private tollway, you know, doesn't work. And it's the same way with this housing thing. There were kind of like these no-bid contracts, and a lot of these housing low-rises just kind of rotted, and they turned out to be just as bad as, you know, Robert Taylor Homes and Cabrini Green. And, you know, one of the people who managed one of these companies that did this stuff was Valerie Jarrett. I mean, in a lot of ways, kind of the black bourgeoisie and power elite in Chicago around which that produced Barack Obama kind of built their power and wealth by kind of brokering or being the public face of this kind of grifting. And, you know, Barack Obama mostly, you know, is above it all. But it just kind of shows that there's this kind of connection of this high-minded, good faith idealism with just some very bad actors. And, you know, Daley moved into this deal to privatize the parking meters. You told your listeners about it, but very quickly, they ended up selling the parking meters to a consortium including three companies, Morgan Stanley, the German investment bank Allianz, and get this, the sovereign wealth fund of Abu Dhabi, you know, the oil kingdom, for about a tenth of what they turned out to be worth.
It well,
gave the city council members 2 days to study the proposal and promised them that they would be able to remove meters and add meters and control the rates. But it turns out that the rates skyrocketed, and this is the really important part. It's a 75-year contract, okay? And if the city decides that they want to remove a parking meter, say because a street, you know, they don't want to have parking on a street and want to turn it into a thoroughfare, they have to, within a month of that decision of removing the parking meter, have to pay how much that parking meter would make for the next 75 years in a check to this consortium. And as our buddy Tom Gagin pointed out in the lawsuit that failed, basically they're turning over the power to govern the state, the city of Chicago, to this investment bank consortium. And that's one of the patterns that Rahm Emanuel has increased, or at least seems to be trying to increase, with something called his infrastructure trust, which we can get into or not.
I want to get into that in a second, but I want to stay on this the parking meter thing, because there's so much to pull out of this dynamic. You had a city that that supposedly needed money.
One of the privatizers said that desperate cities are our best customer.
Of course.
They want this kind of short-term infusion of cash.
Of course.
We're broke refrain is absolutely crucial to this.
And even if it means that in some ways you've got to, you know, another dynamic that I don't think people fully grasp is that it will be in the best interest, in the short term interest of the politicians, to pretend that the city is broke, even though it may look bad on them. They, of course, they'll blame their predecessor when, in fact, the city is not broke. And so you have this situation where my understanding is that there was no political will to raise the rates on these parking meters. So they said, well, then we've got to sell it. And then, of course, the privatizers come in and they raise the rates. And the IG, the Chicago IG, looked at it and found, like, oh, you know what? We undersold this by half. And then it wasn't until later that another study showed, like, wow, they undersold this by a factor of 10. And that dynamic,
and that's built into a lot of these privatization deals. Like when they privatize toll roads, basically, the longer the deal goes on, the more profitable it is to investors, and because the less kind of accountability they have to the people who made the deals in the first place, or dead, basically. And one of the people I quoted compared it to a payday loan. It's like you desperately need cash up front, so you basically accept any terms, no matter how bad, on the back end. And that's what's happening with all these long-term deals. That's why they last 75 years, 99 years, because these investors are guaranteed a steady return that comes straight out of the taxpayers of these municipalities and these cities.
And the interesting thing about that dynamic, where the city is really not in a position now to say, like, oh, we're going to turn this into a pedestrian thoroughway without having to pay the projected profits from that parking meter up front, very much, and I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, but that's the way that you have things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal is sort of structured, in a way where there's no money up front in that deal, but essentially if you inhibit the profit projections with any type of regulation that you, as a democratically theoretically a democratic society, decide to impose, you've got to pay for that right to do so.
It's not a tangent, really, because really what the similarity is these deals, you know, whether it's a trade deal or these kinds of privatization deals, they're fast tracked. right? So they're kind of presented as a fait accompli to the lawmakers, you know, in the case of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Congress or the Senate, and in the case of, say, the parking meter deal and the infrastructure trust, to the city council, and often lied to. And there's these very long legal technical contracts, like a 1,000-page contract to the defense contractor that runs our kind of bus of smart cards, and they can kind of bury hidden fees and scams within these very complicated contracts that are drafted by the best lawyers in the world and vetted by civil servants who just don't have the skills or time to protect the public interest.
So tell us about that ROM's trust, as it were.
ROM and trust, right? They don't really belong in the same sentence.
Indeed.
Although I've been thinking about that. When people say things don't really belong in the same sentence, it doesn't really make sense. You can say, you know, the same sentence is ROM and trust are opposite.
Right.
I guess ROM and trust do belong in the same sentence. So basically, to great fanfare and a front page New York Times article, ROM is great at manipulating the national press. He established this trust whereby investors are supposed to be able to help Chicago repair its roads and bridges and retrofit its buildings and all the rest, and be guaranteed it's basically you invest for a return on the back end, and it was supposed to be this great thing that would kind of relieve the taxpayers of this duty. But it's very mysterious, and there's a couple things to mention about the infrastructure trust. First of all, it hasn't really done anything yet, so it's all kind of a great mystery. But second of all, when they finally came out with the first proposal, it wasn't that investors would be putting money into the retrofitting of buildings, but they were going to add a kind of a surcharge to people's electric bills to retrofit the building. So that was quite a bait and switch right there. But the other thing is, I looked through the ordinance, which none of the reporters in town seem to have done, that green-lighted this infrastructure trust. And there's this absolutely astonishing clause. Again, there's one of these appointed boards appointed solely by the mayor.
And this ordinance is passed by the
city council.
The city council.
It's a rubber stamp. And if you don't, you know, go the mayor's way, he'll, you know, redistrict you out of your ward or use his super PAC, which is a new innovation in Chicago politics to, you know, bury your opponent in cash. And do you have, it's at the end of the article, and I don't have it in front of me, that line from the ordinance about how the Infrastructure Trust Board will have the power to supersede any law passed by the city council?
Yes. It's
the last two paragraphs. I can sing while you're
It is to the extent that any ordinance, resolution, or order of the city is in conflict with the provisions of this ordinance, the provisions of this ordinance shall be controlling.
Yeah, that's right. Like, it's like Congress writing a law saying
that's like an emergency state of emergency.
This law. Yeah, if the Constitution contradicts this law we just passed, the law will be superseded. So what the hell? What the hell? It sounds like a constitutional coup. He's kind of like, you know, buried to have in his pocket for the next year. Again, state of emergency. Who knows? Once he glides to re-election, maybe that will become operative.
That is really stunning. That, just an incredibly bold thing to put into a law. There's no way that anybody can challenge what we're doing here because we just have a license to do whatever we want. We just got basically, you know, this is the 007, as it were.
And the moral of the story is the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, both whose news departments have done great exposés about this stuff, have endorsed him. The Chicago Defender, the black paper, after reporting in detail about the scourge created by these school closings, are endorsing him. Barack Obama's coming to town next week to bestow a national park on Chicago in the neighborhood of Pullman, and he's going to glide to reelection. And
we should say that
coming soon to a city near you.
Right. And we should say that in addition to this, you've got a governor now, Bruce Rauner, who's new to Illinois. He is
our kind of Scott Walker, and him and Rahm Emanuel go fishing every year in Montana.
Well, that was he just issued an executive order, which basically, I mean, it's unconstitutional, at least at this point, by any definition, but basically saying that public sector employees, you don't need to have agency fees. We've talked about this dynamic on this program before, that unions charge agency fees for negotiating on behalf of people who don't want to join the union. They don't collect dues for politics, but they do collect, hey, we're negotiating your contract. You got to pay us
a
something.
And Rauner just lied and said that goes to the political donation,
right? Which is not the case. It's why they called agency fees. And this is a guy who Rahm Emanuel, like you say, goes fishing with, and was, as far as I can tell, sort of had some business dealings with too.
Oh yeah, Rauner is the guy who kind of initiated Emanuel into investment banking after he left the Clinton administration, during which he made $18 million in 2.5 years. Which, you know, he also kind of gives this idealistic coloration. He said he did that so he could, like, afford to, be a public servant for the rest of his life.
Mm.
Which he said in the presence of these, like, public servants who are running against him. And I thought it was, like, that was the time to kind of hit him over the head with a chair. These, you know, four county commissioners and aldermen. But what can I tell you? These guys are really decent public servants who don't understand the game that Rahm Emanuel is playing.
Are they? Is there term limits in Chicago? Or are you going to have this guy
for the rest of your life?
He could
be mayor for the next 100 years.
Really stunning. And I mean, to see, I guess there's a reason why they call it Chicago style politics, maybe, I don't know, but this is, it's really disturbing to, just the relationship this guy has with what's happening nationally. And, it's both a microcosm of what we see on a national level, but also there's like, I'm not convinced there isn't some type of causal connection too between this guy and what we see on a national level in some respects.
Oh, well, he's completely a product of national politics, and he's bringing kind of the worst of Washington politics to Chicago, like this political action committee in which he's kind of sort of drenching the city in money, such that we're seeing commercials for aldermanic races for the first time, basically, in the history of aldermanic races.
And, I mean, to be fair, he also brought his brand of politics to the nation, too, in many respects, part of the congressional leadership in the Democratic Party, and then
But he was the guy who recruited all these former Republicans and some of the Republicans lost, actually. But a lot of them just kind of, once more kind of wrenched the Democratic Party, plumbed to the right.
Indeed.
And he's the guy who said Obamacare was a terrible idea and that Obama should abandon it.
And he's also the guy who was part of the that first Clinton administration. But
the NAFTAs are.
Yes. Well, Rick, I wish you had better news for us, but I definitely appreciate your telling us this story. And it really is just a horrible shame and a big disappointment, not just obviously on a personal level, Karen Lewis, but I think there was a real sense of progressives around the country looking to Karen Lewis, and a lot had to do with the success and the dynamics of that Chicago teacher strike that she led.
She handed them that.
Well, Rick, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, brother.